Today's episode of The Thriller Zone is sponsored by Blackstone Publishing and the brilliant new techno thriller 4 Minutes by the number one internationally best-selling author duo, Brian Andrews and Jeff Wilson. 4 Minutes is available now from your favorite bookseller. Welcome to The Thriller Zone. I'm your host, David Temple. On the TZ, we explore the thrilling world of fiction crafted by today's most compelling authors. And on today's 172nd episode, we delve into the thrilling universe of C.J. Box, the mastermind behind unforgettable tales of the American West. From the rugged landscapes of Wyoming to the intricate webs of mystery and suspense, C.J. Box's novels captivate readers with their vivid characters and gripping plots. Join me as we journey through his acclaimed series featuring game warden Joe Pickett and discover what sets Box apart as a writer who seamlessly blends adrenaline-pumping action with deep insights into the human condition. We'll explore Box's unique storytelling style, his knack for creating authentic settings, and the themes that resonate throughout his body of work. His new book, 3-Inch Teeth, centers around a rogue grizzly bear and the havoc he creates, plus some underhanded characters you're going to love to despise. Whether you're a longtime fan or new to CJ's books, prepare to be immersed in a world where danger lurks around every corner and justice is always worth fighting for. And take it from this CJ newbie. This is one of those authors you can count on me reading and sharing for years to come. So saddle up as we embark on an adventure through the pages of C.J. Box's 3-Inch Teeth, here on the home of your front row seat to the best thriller writers in the world, now sponsored by the good folks at Blackstone Publishing. Welcome to The Thriller Zone.
You know, if I saw you on the street, I'm so used to seeing you in your cowboy hat, I'm like, I don't even recognize this guy.
Yeah, well, you know, I found out that cowboy hats and headphones don't work real well together. Of course, my headphones aren't working either, so it didn't matter.
It's so funny because that thought went through my mind, CJ, was I'm like, how is he going to put headphones over that cowboy hat?
You don't.
I'm so excited about talking about 3-Inch Teeth. Let me just say out of the gate, this was so much fun to read. Oh.
Well, good. I'd love to hear that.
And I wondered if it ever gets old. And then I thought, well, no, who doesn't like a couple of compliments from time and again?
Absolutely. I mean, every time I get done with a book, I think, they're gonna find me out as a fraud I am this time.
CJ, explain to me why everybody thinks that. Why does every single author that I've spoken to go, oh man, on this one, they're gonna find out?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that other than you're such a free agent. You're completely flying blind. It's just you. There's no feedback. You just hope that, you know, when you get to the end that, readers are as satisfied as you are or not.
Well, I am relatively new. I'll admit it right up front, relatively new to the CJ Box fan club, but you can count me now an avid front row fan.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You may have seen on social media the day I was talking about how fast I read this book.
I did. And, yeah, I did see that. Thank you.
Yeah. And I hope that's a compliment. It's one of those things where when I find something I really enjoy, I try my hardest to tap the brakes and slow down. But dadgummit, dude, you wrote this thing to where the pages just melted into each other. So I couldn't help myself.
Well, I always figure as writing, if I'm starting to get bored, the reader's starting to get bored. So let's move it along.
You know? Yeah. Well, my wife often asks Tammy, she who's a semi-regular on the show, she'll catch me off reading in the corner, and she'll ask me, every once in a while, well, how do you like this author's work, and what are you enjoying most about this guy? And how does it compare to others? And it's funny because we were out to dinner the other night and I said, I boil it down to three things. Yeah, I'm either going to read for this show, interviews and so forth, so it's a little bit of work and business. Sure. Then I'll read for things that I want to learn. I want to learn mastery, creativity. I want to see how you work your mechanics because I'm an analytical guy. And then third, there are those books that I read just for pure enjoyment where I go, okay, there's no pressure. There's no tie. I don't have to do a damn thing. And I'll just grab a book And CJ, if your book didn't click off every single one of those things.
Wow, that's a huge compliment. I'm not even sure how to respond to that. Thank you.
Well, it is one of those, you know, you remind me, this storytelling mastery of yours is, and I don't want to spend too much time just blowing, I'm not blowing smoke up your skirt. I shoot it like it is. And I'm like, there's something about his storytelling. You've gotten all, and you, what are you, 24 with the, take it now, yeah, 30 plus total. But right. You should know what you're doing. But there is a finesse that you have mastered. That is just, it's like watching a great quarterback make that unbelievable throw. And I'm.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. All that glowing praise aside, since I know we've got, you know, kind of limited time. Another neat thing when I'm reading Three Inch Teeth is the way that you made me feel like life can be a lot simpler out there in nature.
Simpler, like when a grizzly bear charges out of the trees and chomps your head.
Okay, that's not so simple. I think it was the building up the story to the way that you create this thing in my mind about how we really just, and you live right in the middle of nature. I think you're on a pretty good size spread, so you're just nature's all around you. So you're spoiled that way, but. But yeah, to your point about the grizzly, and when you describe the way he's just clamping down on the skull, and then I learned, well, here you go. I learned a pounds per square inch, and I'm like, holy bananas.
Right. Yeah. One of the things I really do enjoy with every book is the research part of it. Sometimes, you know, subjects, because I take on subjects that I'm not familiar with to some degree in order to write about them, because I write a lot about environmental and energy issues, resource issues, you know, outdoor ethics kind of things. And in this case, you know, anybody who goes out into the wild thinks about bears. It's just natural. They're bigger than us. They're faster. They're meaner. Could be. And but in the last 5 years or so in Wyoming, there have been more what the wildlife officials call grizzly human encounters than ever before. Two years ago, there were three fatalities, all hunters. And in one of those cases in particular, it was a elk hunting guide, and his client had just knocked an elk down around Jackson Hole. And the guide was starting to take care of that elk, and two grizzly bears just came charging out of the trees right at him, never stopped, never did the bluff charge, never roared, just went right at the guide and killed him. The client got away, but I was able to talk to the head of the predator. In the book, there's the predator attack team that really exists. And it's like a SWAT team that goes after big wild animals after an incident like that. And when the helicopter arrived, the two bears were kind of just standing around the body. They weren't eating it. They weren't caching it. They were like guarding it. And one of the bears actually attacked the helicopter, and they killed that bear. They killed the other bear the next day. And the head of the attack team is a biologist. He's a PhD. He's a large carnivore specialist for the state of Wyoming. He'd never seen behavior like this, unprovoked attack. And they thought that maybe the bear had a brain tumor or something. So they actually cut the head off the bear. And as they were transporting it by helicopter to a lab, there was so much bear spray in the fur of that bear that the pilot teared up as he was dry. So the guy did everything right. He sprayed the bear with bear spray. He couldn't get to his gun in time, but the attack was totally unprovoked. And the bears had never been, they didn't have a rap sheet. You know, they know a lot of these bears, and these two bears had never encountered before, never had a human interaction.
Is this true? You reference this in the book about the psychology, or the fact that the bear gets aggressive, and then it triggers something in their mind to Once they've we'll use the phrase tasted human flesh, then now they're driven for that more often. That's a real thing.
Not so much driven as once they cross that line, because bears tend to be hardwired to avoid humans, human contact. But of those few that have crossed that line, they lose that fear. That's one reason why some, you know, not all bears, but a number of them who are in these encounters have to be killed. Sometimes the bears who attack people are simply relocated. Like when a person walks between a sow and her cubs, and the sow's trying to protect her cubs and attack someone, that's not necessarily a homicidal bear. That's a mama bear. And that bear might be more likely relocated. But when it's an unprovoked attack, like the one I talked about earlier, in order to save other people's lives, those bears need to be taken out.
And define for me, what is caching?
That means hiding, basically. What a grizzly bear does once they kill a big animal, they may feed on it a little, but then they hide it away. They cover it with sticks and leaves, so then they can come back later and finish it.
Got it. Okay. So you're talking about this group that the group comes out and cover, researches the murder scene and so forth. Is there a real actual group called Mama Bears, something like that, where these activists are just, I see by the grin.
It's more something like that. I made up the name Mama Bears.
Oh, it's.
There's no doubt that there are, there's activists.
Yeah.
They're generally very well-meaning. They love bears. There are celebrity bears in Yellowstone Park and around that area that have a designated name and number. And there are people who wait every year for them to come out of their dens to see how many cubs they have. There's one called 399 that's more popular than I am in Wyoming. And they every year, everybody's tracking these bears. And they... I'm going to say this word wrong. Amamorphosize.
Oh yeah.
Meaning they tend to give human characteristics to wild animals.
Yeah.
We all do it. We all have pets. We all, do that. But in this case, some of them have interfered with wildlife officials who are trying to dispatch bears because they will try to save the bears at any cost, no matter what they've done.
So you made a comment that these bears are more popular than you are. Do you find yourself, is there a little bit of Hollywood mystique around you? Like when you're walking through town, is it just every, hey, CJ, what's that? Or can you kind of disappear?
I can pretty much disappear. I live in a very small community in southern Wyoming, and the people here all know who I am and what I do, but they tend to just be, they let us maintain our privacy.
Yeah.
There's always fishermen. It's a big fly fishing area. Fly fishermen who are fans of the books ask the guides where I live. They'll always tell them the wrong direction. And I appreciate that.
What is your favorite outdoor activity? We know you're a prolific writer, but when you just want to tap the brakes and get out and just, chill. What's your favorite pastime?
Definitely fly fishing. I fish as much as I can, primarily in this area for trout and floating and wading. But I also do some saltwater fly fishing down in Mexico for big, big fish. And so that's kind of my passion. I do hunt elk, not because I have bloodlust, but because I've got three adult daughters who are all foodies, and they love to invite people over and give them elk steaks. So they pressure me every year. So that's part of my job.
And you can't get much better eating than that, right? I mean,
elk's great.
Another one of the things, CJ, that I like about your books is the way that when I'm listening to conversations, and this is going to sound a little bit like a duh statement, except for the fact that not all writers do this, and you have mastered that craft. And that is, when I listen to your character speak, it's like I'm just eavesdropping on a conversation. You don't throw out conversations that are mechanical or seem false. That's another thing I'm so attracted to, is the way that it's just like, it's just guys sitting around, and it's vernacular, it's cadence. And
Well, thank you. Yeah, that as a, you know, as a reader myself, I get really annoyed when, you know, the dialogue takes you out of the story because you think people don't really talk like that. Maybe William F. Buckley talks like that, but nobody else talks like that. And when there's too much of it and it gets too writerly and it gets too show-offy, I think.
Well, and that's so well put is that, yeah, you don't want, if it takes you, anything that takes you out or makes you stop or go, oh, what time is it? Is this story ever going to end? Yeah, you're in trouble. Besides good entertainment, what do you hope? And I'm sure there's a little bit of something in every book, and you've got, Jesus, you got every single book you've written behind you. When you write a book, do you have something, do you have a message or a feeling or an emotion that you go, oh, I want them to take away this? And we'll be right back.
Today's episode is sponsored by Blackstone Publishing and the new thriller 4 Minutes by the best-selling authors of the Sons of Valor series, Brian Andrews and Jeff Wilson. When Special Ops Chief Tyler Brooks is recruited to lead an elite new squad to face an unpredictable enemy, he's promised access to mind-bending technology, the ability to glimpse into the future, collecting intel to stop attacks in the present. But when a plot to attack America, threatening the lives of millions, is discovered, is 4 minutes enough time to change the outcome? This new techno thriller will have you on the edge of your seat until the very last page. 4 minutes is available now from your favorite bookseller.
Now back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes. With every book, even though, you know, there's certainly, you know, a whodunit or a procedural element to it, they're really not about whodunits. They're really about topics or big issues or controversies, you know, that happen in the Mountain West. And what I try to do is talk to people on both sides, because so many issues start here, especially when it comes like energy development, wind. We were talking about wind turbines 15 years ago before anybody knew they were out there. Yeah. So I talk to people on both sides, and then I have the issue in the book, and I always have characters on each side make their point, trusting the reader to come down where they may. And I think for some readers, it may be the first time they heard the other side of some of these things.
Oh,
I try not to write agenda books by any means, but to give both sides and trust the reader, you know. So I guess what I hope is, you know, some number of years from now, if anybody is interested in what it was like in the Mountain West during the, you know, in 2024, they can read these books and get a pretty good idea of what people were like, what the issues were like, what the society was like. But other than that, I'm not trying for some grand message.
And maybe a healthy respect for bears.
Hopefully. Yeah, they may need more and more of that.
There, my wife and I were sitting there watching, of course, the minute I go to say it, I'll drop it, but it's the climbing Mount Everest, Krakauer.
Anyway,
you know what I'm talking about.
I loved it. Yeah.
Here's one thing I was so struck with. And when I'm watching it, one of the guides said, when you get up that mountain, the mountain always has the last word.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how you're prepared, how you've trained, how much oxygen or food or fitness, blah, blah, blah. Mountain gets the last word. And it's so funny because as you see that proceed, you're like, wow, I hadn't thought about that. And it made me think of your book because we were watching this movie last night and I'm, of course, prepping for this today. And I'm like, you know, whether it's bears or a weather front coming in, you really do have to be aware and yield to Mother Nature is the big queen. She's in control.
That's one thing I think I've portrayed in my mind accurately since the very first book is the fact that nature is amoral. Things can happen. Just because you're a good person doesn't mean you may not freeze to death or you have all the right thoughts in mind when you go out there and support the right causes, that things can happen and do. And, you know, it's not kind necessarily. It just operates and we're a small part of it. And, you know, I love to portray that. I love to, you know, portray the weather and the, you know, all the things that can happen. But I think in a realistic way.
And P.S., nature was here first. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. They were atop the hill first. I would be remiss if I did not ask, and I know we're of course on 3-inch teeth, but what's next for Joe Pickett? I got to figure, I know you're already working on the next one because I'm sitting here looking at your flow and I'm like, wait a minute, is he doing one or two a year?
For some years I was doing like a book and a half a year. Wow. The Joe Pickett book every year. And then I had another series and a couple of standalones. I'm working on the next Joe Pickett book now. And as you can imagine, having finished it, it's going to be very Nate Romanowski centric. The next one, because Nate is going after revenge.
Man, I love that. When you saw him basically, oh, I don't want to give anything away. When he got it in his head of what he was going to do, there's no stopping him.
That's right. And
that's safe?
Kind of what he's famous for.
Yeah. Wow. That is just yet again, a great character. Now, I love the fact that you have been an EP, for those not know what that is, executive producer on the Joe Pickett series, and then also on Big Sky, based on the Cassie Newell novels. Do you like that end of the business? And do you see yourself getting more and more involved in the Hollywood scene? And you can take that however you mean. The Hollywood scene? Yeah. Or just doing lunches and making business happen.
No, I think, you know, I've been asked many times what I do as an executive producer. And my answer really basically is I provide the source material and I cash the checks. That's about it. I have been on the sets of the shows. I find it really, really tedious and boring to be there to watch the same scene shot 27 times and listen to it through headphones in a tent. I'd rather not be there. But although I have, you know, I've consulted with the producers and the showrunners on a big, you know, 30,000 foot scale on what they're going to do in this next season or not, or which books they're going to use. And in the Joe Pickett series in particular, they were very close to the source material, which I very much appreciated. Actually hearing some of those lines of dialogue, you know, back is pretty great. But mainly with the most important thing my wife and I have realized is that TV shows are 1 hour commercials for the books. And if I don't think they're going to be more than that, then I'm pretty pleased. And in fact, they have attracted a lot of new readers. Readers are smart, you know, like you are, and I think I am, where if you see something that's really intriguing, you want to know where it came from and you'll go find those books. And, you know, I just hear constantly from people saying, I saw one of the shows, I went and got all the books, I'm all caught up now. And they wouldn't have known about it otherwise. So from that standpoint, it's terrific.
And you're the personification of having nailed this thing. And I think about this as I'm looking at the books behind you. You know, you find one. Now, this is my first CJ Box book. And I go, if I liked it this much in that rare free time that I have to now go backwards. So here's my point. Your back library is sitting there waiting for the audiences to go, oh, well, if there's this, then there's more over here.
Yeah, the pandemic was very, very good for me. Some writers I have talked to said exactly the opposite. But in my case, an awful lot of people, you can't ever put a number on this, but an awful lot of people communicated with me that they've been wanting to read these books. They've heard about these books and they finally had the time to read them and they read them all. And so, because I don't expect anybody to pick up 24 books and start at the beginning necessarily, but I appreciate it that those who have.
Something that just popped into my head, CJ, and I was having this conversation with Greg Hurwitz, and it's about AI, and we were talking about the fears and or the pluses and the minuses of AI, especially as it pertains to writing, story creation, etc. Do you have any thoughts, fears, anxieties, insights on that?
From what I understand, and I have been reading a lot about it, AI is a data miner. So it spits out things that already exist, sometimes in really interesting fashion, but it's not creative. It can't come up with a new concept unless it's already been put down digitally somewhere. So I think for most, at least authors like me, I'm not too worried about that. I don't think AI could conceive of, a mechanical bear face and teeth put together in the back of a pickup truck. Maybe it could, but I kind of doubt it.
When you came up with that, I thought, okay, he has to either have a little bit of engineering background or just an over-the-top imagination or a combination of both.
That's what my wife says, something like that. Like, what is wrong with you?
It's kind of like when I'm talking to somebody and I mention to my wife, I'm like, I think I've got to come up with a pretty good way to kill that person. And she looks at me like, where did that come from?
Yes.
No, just imagination, honey.
That old saying, if you walk around with a hammer, everything starts to look like a nail. Every object looks like a murder weapon if you're in that frame of mind.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got to start wrapping up because I don't want to crush you here. It's been, 15 years since you won that first Edgar. And I wonder, it asked me, do you think it's gotten easier or harder to win awards today? And I'm kind of directing that at you, but since you're so active in the writing community, I know you have a 30,000 view of what it probably is for the system in general. So do you think the award winning is harder, easier now? Do you think it's as important now?
Wow, no one has ever asked that question. I haven't given that a lot of thought, but I think, I actually think it's harder once you're very well established, because I think the tendency of award committees is to reward newcomers, new voices, the new hot thing, rather than those who are very well established. There's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
I've been on some of those committees myself, and I get really excited when I discover somebody as opposed to the tried and true, my favorites out there that I probably wouldn't consider.
And on a similar note, what do you see as some of maybe, I'm going to call them new challenges that faces people today than when you began your career? Because you're a couple of decades in, and it was a whole different landscape, and the competition is fierce. What kind of new challenges or landscape?
My impression, and I think it's harder now to break through. I think when my first book was published 2001, there were a lot of what they called mid-list writers in the middle, not hugely popular, but and I think at that time publishers were more willing to give it somebody they believed in two or three books in order to maybe establish themselves and earn out. Whereas now I think they get one shot and that's it. And if that second book doesn't outsell the first, goodbye, find a new job. I think there's a lot more of that than there used to be.
Yeah, that phrase earn out, I'm hearing more and more in conversations with guys that are struggling to get that fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh one. And it is a tough landscape. But this is going to lead me up to my finale question that I ask all of my author guests, CJ. And that is, what is your best piece of writing advice? And here's what I'm getting at. There's a lot of listeners who turn to the show for sure a little bit of entertainment, and hopefully we're giving them that. But also, they love the advice of guys and gals who have gone before them, paved the way, and has gained the insight. So, I hope that was enough of lead up to really give you time to
think of two things offhand. One's more general, and one's more specific. And I think in general, I'm always amazed to meet fledgling writers at, at conferences or at book signings who say they've got six or seven books ready to go. And you know, how do I get published? And I'll say, who do you read? What is, and often fledgling writers aren't readers. They're so in love with their own voices that they really don't necessarily want to see what else is out there. And I always advise people, read books, not only in what your genre is and your interests, but outside of that. So you can learn how, you know, learn how are books constructed? How did that best-selling author pull that one off? You know, how is it done? You know, look at these books clinically as opposed to just my favorite kind of book. And the other thing, the biggest mistake I see most of the time is that writers can't figure out point of view, whether the point of view of the characters in the book. Is it told from their perspective? Is it omniscient? Is it, you know, God speaking, telling the reader what everybody is thinking, or are they just actually thinking on the page and they're thinking what? And I see that point of view mistake in some really established, well-known authors' books. Sometimes it takes me out of it immediately.
And what part of that point of view is the most annoying to you?
When it goes from, when the point of view goes from the character to the writer telling you what the character is thinking, as opposed to the character simply thinking it. You know, show, don't tell.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so good, CJ. So good. And it seems so simple too, doesn't it?
It really is, but it's really easy to mess that one up, you know.
Yeah.
I tend to do lots of points of view in every book from different characters, and it's really hard not to kind of screw that up. You got to concentrate on that.
And how many books do you think? Last question: how many books do you think you were in before you went, oh, I see what I've been doing?
I remember it was the third book called Winter Kill. And then I remember I was about 3/4 of the way through it. And I thought, oh my God, I think I am a writer. I think these first two flukes got by, but this one feels like I sort of know what I'm doing. And I remember telling my wife exactly that, you know, I feel more when I do what I was doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm off to the races now, baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, folks, once again, the book is 3-inch tea. It is a book I could not put down. I think I read it in 2 sittings. It was just absolutely delightful. You want to learn more about CJ, of course, cjbox.net. And buddy, I'll tell you, I have watched you from afar. I hadn't read you, but I watched you from afar. I saw you at Thriller Fest. I'm always in the back going, oh man, that guy's smart. And look at that hat.
I don't know.
Well, but listen, this was a real honor, and I mean that with all sincerity. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. This was really fun. Welcome aboard.
Yeah. Yes. Welcome aboard the box tray. All right. Well, again, cjbox.net. You can follow him on all the social angles as I do, and so good to meet you.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Your front row seat to the best thrillers. The Thriller.
The Thriller Zone has been presented by Blackstone Publishing and the exciting new techno thriller 4 Minutes, now available from your favorite bookseller. Learn more at blackstonepublishing.com.